So far, the terrorists are winning in College Park, Maryland. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. In the days following the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, President Bush himself observed that to the extent we let fear keep us from returning to our normal lives, the terrorists have won. Unfortunately, that philosophy appears not to have filtered down through the Homeland Security bureaucracy. Despite the fact that small general aviation aircraft are acknowledged to represent an unattractive option for terrorists, GA pilots who based their planes at College Park Airport, Hyde Field, and Potomac Airfield, three small general aviation airports near the U.S. Capitol, continue to suffer under oppressive, overreaching security measures more than 6 years later. Perhaps the most discouraging part of this story is the reported near-total lack of communication between the Transportation Security Administration and management at these airports, where the aviation-related industries and communities suffering the economic impact of the suffocating bureaucracy have not been able to make their cases. Today, we'll hear details from the perspective of Lee Schick, College Park Airport manager.
We're very proud of College Park Airport, predominantly because it's the world's oldest airport in continuous operation, going back to 1909. The Wright brothers came here with the Army Signal Corps, and their job was to teach the first cadre of military pilots. So essentially, this was also the first Air Force base. And we've had pilots that have trained here with names like Hap Arnold and others of equal stature. And as time went on at this airport, other first and notable events took place. In the late teens, this was the Washington terminus for the first airmail service. They flew out of College Park Airport to Philadelphia and Washington and other places. Going a little bit beyond that, after that, this became the test bed for instrument landing systems for ILS. Machine gun experimentation from an airplane. They first decided if they could use an aircraft for offensive weapons, and they started dropping bombs and testing machine guns here at College Park Airport. The first cross-country formation flight took place here by the Army. Later on in the 30s, the father and son team of the Berliners, they were experimenting with vertical flight, and they put together various prototypes of aircraft, finally arrived at one which could actually take off and land. We have film documentation. And this became the site of the first helicopter experiments in the United States. And so our history just keeps going and going on and on. We've been very proud of it. This airport's maintained its operation since 1909, and we're looking forward to the future, too. Well, obviously, probably one of the most impacting days in this airport's almost 100-year history was September 11th, 2001. On that date, at about 10 o'clock in the morning, we had the television on here at the airport, and some pilots were watching, and they announced that an aircraft had apparently gone off course, taking off from a New York airport and struck one of the buildings in New York, and we felt bad about that. Obviously, shortly afterwards, when the second strike took place, we knew that it was something more sinister than an accident. About that time, we noticed that there was an unusual number of arrivals here at College Park Airport. We had about a dozen airplanes that landed here. And as we talked with the pilots as to what happened, they said FAA had requested that they force them to land here at the airport. It's kind of unique in that the federal government did not notify us at College Park Airport that we were closed. We learned that from the likes of Rather and Jennings and Brokaw, who had informed us watching television that our airport was in fact closed. We confirmed this with the Secret Service, immediately brought in our park police who have jurisdiction on this property, and the airport was closed with approximately 15 transit pilots who didn't want to be here. And that was that day. The next 3 to 4 days, we spent living here 24 hours a day. We had police presence all over. We secured the perimeter to make sure that all our aircraft were secured, because nobody really knew what was going to happen. We thought that our airport would probably reopen in a few days after the airspace had been cleared and the abundance of caution that they were demonstrating had gone away. This airport remained shuttered for 5.5 months. No aircraft were allowed to fly in or fly out. No reasons were given. We were never given an explanation other than our airport was closed. Approximately halfway through that process, the FAA did allow what they called a flush out, where in one evening they allowed all the aircraft to take off basically in formation to leave the airport. And so all of our trapped transients and about half of our tenants elected to leave the airport with the aircraft and move geographically further out. The airport remained closed here for about 5.5 months until the Washington Post finally ran a sympathetic article about the plight of College Park Airport. And lo and behold, the Deputy Secretary of the Transportation finally did call us. And after a few more weeks, we were able to arrive at a program where we could semi-reopen to tenants only. And so this airport remained a tenant-only airport after the pilots went through a rather extensive vetting process. The newly created TSA, still trying to find out what their actual mission was, had decided that all pilots at College Park Airport must go through a rather extensive background check before they could be trusted to fly in the Washington airspace. And that required going through a fingerprinting process with the Secret Service. It required going through a substantial background check with the FBI, going through a flight check history with the FAA, attending a briefing, attesting to that briefing, and then receiving a discrete PIN number, which you exchange with flight service every time that you filed a flight plan to come and go from College Park Airport. Some pilots just went along with the program because they figured that was the price you pay to fly at College Park Airport. Others chose to vote with their feet, move their aircraft to further outlying surrounding airports. And so the economic carnage at College Park Airport started after that. On 9/11, we had an aircraft population of about 100 tenant-based airplanes. But more importantly, we were looking at probably another 100 transient aircraft that were coming and going here routinely, because College Park Airport is the closest airport to Washington, D.C. We're a 3-minute walk from the subway, and it's just the ideal place for GA to come to Washington. Those aircraft were not allowed to use the airport. So essentially, my customer base went from 450,000 general aviation pilots down to the 35 pilots that remained at College Park Airport. In the initial days shortly after 9/11, we were certainly wanting to cooperate 100% with our federal security resources. We felt that we had a responsibility to make sure that College Park Airport was not going to be a terrorist problem for them. As time went on and the newly created TSA came into existence, we began to get a little bit frustrated with the government's response to the 9/11 crisis as it pertained to College Park Airport. It was difficult, if not impossible, to find someone within the bowels of our federal government who would talk to us about what our requirements were and what our needs were going to be. It was frustrating to listen to TSA give out press releases talking about local airport operators and the state and the federal security resources being partners and working together. Mm-hmm. It's now 7 years. I have never been partnered with any meeting or initiative with the federal government as to the operating rules at this airport. So it was a pretty cavalier from the top down, arbitrary decisions made at the federal government. And that's been our problem all along, is that we have yet, 7 years later, been unable to find a face, a person, a title that we could talk to discuss the problems that we're having here at College Park Airport.
We'll hear more on the plight of the DC-3 in general and College Park Airport in particular from Airport Manager Lee Schick in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Platt. We're listening today to Lee Schick, manager of the College Park Airport in Maryland. College Park is one of three small general aviation airports near Washington, D.C., where tight security all but ended operations. Today, some dedicated, persistent pilots have negotiated the TSA maze and are flying from the airport, but they still face some distinct challenges.
Today, we went from a low water mark of about 22 based airplanes shortly after 9/11 to we're back to about 50 aircraft now. So we've recovered some as far as our tenant based population. More importantly, though, we're concerned about the proficiency of some of those pilots. We're concerned about their ability to fly. There are a lot of arbitrary procedures. An example that comes to mind right now is closed pattern operations. 4 years ago, we explained to the TSA and other federal security resources that pilots really need to remain proficient at this airport because it is different, it has short approaches, and it's unique in its flying environment. And so we asked for permission for vetted, approved background check pilots to perform closed pattern operations here, repeated takeoffs and landings. We were told that that was a threat to national security and would not be allowed. About a year later, we asked the same question, and the answer from TSA was, well, air traffic control says that's too much congestion. So we talked to air traffic control, and they say it doesn't matter to us one hill of beans how many airplanes remain in the pattern. We go back to TSA, and we say, this can be accomplished. You have people that have been checked. You know what their background is. They ought to be allowed to remain proficient. The TSA comes up with the standard answer. We will look into it, and we are now going on the third year of waiting for an answer from the TSA. And that's just one of the problems. The other one involves the vetting procedure itself. College Park Airport would be the first to say that we need to know who our pilots are and what their intentions are. And so we concur that a vetting process is necessary. We take issue and umbrage, however, with the federal procedure that has always been in effect that requires a pilot to physically come to Washington, D.C. to be fingerprinted, to physically drive to Baltimore FISDO to be background checked by the FAA before they're allowed to use College Park Airport. We need to remember that the technology is there and it's a relatively simple process, that the FISDO database, for example, is sitting at the computer desks of 85 other FISDO offices all over the United States. Reagan National Airport does not hold a patent on the fingerprinting process. That is available virtually anywhere in the United States. We've always maintained that if those background checks were necessary, pilots around the country ought to be allowed to go to some local resource and have that done and then receive permission to use College Park Airport. As it is now, to make the physical trip, very few pilots are willing to expend that type of energy to fly into College Park Airport. And it makes us think that our federal resources would prefer that pilots not use the Washington airspace. I would have liked to have seen a federal government response, something along these lines. What is the most utility we can get out of College Park Airport consistent with national security? I would have preferred that approach rather than the one we have today, which kind of tells me how bad can we choke these airports down and still get away with it. College Park Airport is only one of three airports inside the flight restricted zone. We all suffer from the same consequences. We all suffer from the same overreaction of federal resources. All three of us have always held the same position, that is there someone within the federal government we can talk to explain our side of the story? We served as a very vital transportation structure at one time. We have to remember that the University of Maryland is only 1 mile from here. We have a lot of high-tech industry in the surrounding areas now and consultants. We were seeing a lot of traffic coming in from all up and down the East Coast of businessmen, educators, scientists, people going downtown to testify in Congress, working all through the Washington area. This was the place to come to. In addition to that, we had our recreational and personal flyers who enjoyed this. It's a public park. It's part of our park system. And they enjoyed coming out here. We enjoyed having our Air Explorer post. We enjoyed giving airplane rides to kids. We enjoyed exposing kids to aviation. You saw the signs when you came in here today. You don't walk out on our flight line anymore unless you've been approved. We're kind of a static facility now. And it's really a shame. All this didn't have to happen. This airport should serve as the canary in the mine shaft for any other small general aviation airport. General aviation security by federal government is not going to go away. And the trend is always to make it more insidious, to make it larger, to make it more complicated. This airport should serve as a warning that you need to constantly be in touch and attempt to convince your elected and appointed federal officials that there is a delicate balance between our freedoms as American pilots and national security. We haven't seen that at College Park Airport yet, and we hope that we will see it in the future. This isn't about one man's cause. This is just one American citizen who's using general aviation security and a small airport as a springboard for trying to show people that our federal government needs to be watched. They have our best interest at heart, usually. But there is so much overreaction that has been going on in the name of anti-terrorism that we're losing our liberties, we're losing our freedom little by little. General aviation is just one small segment of that. But it's a small segment that I can put my arms around and embrace. And so I choose to constantly remind the federal government that there could be a better way to do this.
Next year, College Park Airport will celebrate its centennial. What kind of celebration will it be? Will sanity replace hysteria? Or, using President Bush's definition, will the terrorists still be winning? Lee Schick is the College Park Airport Manager. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.